Hi, this is Sandy Rios. Just to tell you that today's show really is for mature audiences only. So be careful with your kids listening today, okay? Here we go.
It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Tonight we're going to talk about a little bit of history. Doing the impossible, defeating the Equal Rights Amendment. It's been about 25 years since we celebrated the final burial of the Equal Rights Amendment, known as ERA, a proposed amendment to the U.S. Constitution that was advertised as a great benefit to women, something that would rescue women from second-class citizenship, and for the first time, put women into the Constitution. ERA was passionately debated across America from 1972 to 1982. And then ERA was rejected by the American people. And the big lesson we learn from this is that in the marvelous process of self-government given to us by our founding fathers, it is possible for the people to defeat the entire political and media establishment and to win despite incredible odds.
That was the voice of Phyllis Schlafly in 2007, talking about the defeat of the Equal Rights Amendment. Sandy Rios with you this morning. You know, the Equal Rights Amendment for many is kind of the epicenter, the way that the understanding of feminism is. And basically, you think that it's equal rights for men and women. But the truth is that the Equal Rights Amendment, which is, by the way, being resurrected right now, the Equal Rights Amendment basically barred any differences, any distinctions at all between males and females. And as interpreted now, of course, it would make people from other kinds of gender persuasions equal as well. But not equal, barring any kinds of distinctions. Phyllis Schlafly was the arch enemy of the feminist movement and of the feminists themselves. I had the privilege of knowing and working with Phyllis, and she was a tremendous inspiration to me. But there is so much about that movement that some of us don't know. Now, our kids, our young daughters, our college-age daughters, and some of you who are mothers now, will remember probably a great emphasis on feminism when you were in colleges and universities. But so much of that sprung from the work and the thinking of one woman. It was a woman named Kate Millett. And Kate Millett was a famous mind. She had a great mind, but she also wrote a book called Sexual Politics, which was kind of, the New York Times described it as the Bible of feminism. We're going to talk today to someone who knew her well because she grew up in the same house. Kate Millett had tremendous influence on this country, on feminism, on abortion rights, and many things that you maybe don't even know about. And we're going to talk about, peel back the layers and talk about exactly how that developed. Mallory Millett was Kate's sister, but Mallory has grown up to be quite a lady in her own right. She lives in New York City. She has traveled extensively throughout the Third World. And interestingly enough, she is now the CFO for several different corporations and the longtime director of the David Horowitz Freedom Center and also on the Board of Regents for the Center for Security Policy. You can always already see by that bio that Mallory is not still in the same camp as her sister Kate. Mallory, thanks for joining us this morning.
I'm so happy to be with you, Sandy.
Well, let me just tell people that you and I met recently at the Eagle Forum, Eagle Council meeting in Washington, and it was just a privilege to meet you and have a few minutes with you, but mostly I was blown away by your talk. And so I'm so eager to have you share what you know, Mallory, with my audience. Let's talk about your sister first, and then your sister's bio is just amazing. And I'm going to help you out. I'm going to just do some bullet points here. She got her bachelor's degree with honors from the University of Minnesota. She was elected to Phi Beta Kappa. 2 years later, she was awarded a master's degree with first-class honors from the University of Oxford. She went to New York City then to become an artist. She taught kindergarten in Harlem. She married a Japanese sculptor after living in Japan named Fumio Yoshimura. She came back to New York, and she taught English and philosophy at Barnard College. She got her Ph.D. at Columbia with distinction. Her thesis became Sexual Politics, and that's the book I referred to, which is referred to by the New York Times as the Bible of Feminism. That's just a tiny little bit. What else, Mallory, would you want us to know? Not the personal things about her life yet, but her bio. Is there anything else I have left out that you think is significant?
Well, that's pretty spot on. You have just about everything that that accounts for her background that that one would want to know, and that qualified her for the sort of distinction that she had as a teacher and as a lecturer and a writer. The problem is that what people just don't know, and that is the most the most important aspect about her, is that she was seriously mentally ill. And this is something that isn't really left out of her bio, because she wrote several books about her mental illness. One was called Flying. One was called The Loony Bin Trip. But if a person is this severely mentally ill, it underlies everything that goes on with them. You know, there's no sanity coming out. And this was the problem in dealing with Kate. Yeah. We grew up in the same bedroom. We shared bunk beds. And for as long as I could remember, she was completely off the wall. She was a very, very, very difficult person. She was extremely sadistic, extremely cruel, completely unconscious of the needs of others or how anybody around her felt. She would walk into a room, and the minute she entered the room, it became a nightmare. When I was a little girl, I would watch people's faces. I was 3 and 4 years old, and there would be a happy room full of people. People would be having a Christmas celebration or something, and everybody would be having a joyous time. I grew up in a very happy family, people with great senses of humor. And the minute Kate would walk into the room, a pall would fall over everything. I mean, even when she was 10 years old, 12 years old. And I look at this and think, oh, my goodness, what is going on here? I never want to have this sort of reception from other human beings. And then when I was very small, I decided that whatever Kate did, I would really do the opposite. I just wanted to be everything that she wasn't. So it was very hard to watch the world begin to emulate her and call her, consider her a virtual goddess. I mean, there was a time when she was first put on the cover of Time magazine, and she was being touted everywhere, that I swear to God, you could walk into the country of Rwanda and say the name Kate Millett, and everyone knew who you meant. Now she's being forgotten, and it's much to my great relief that it's now become Betty Friedan and Gloria Steinem, and that's all anybody talks about. But it was extremely difficult to deal with this personality and this person. And I was thrown in so closely with her. I was, when she first became very famous, she hired me as her assistant, and I had to work cheek by jowl with her. And when a person is this sick and they're not sleeping 24 hours a day, she would go 4 and 5 days with no sleep, which would make it so she was just absolutely wild. She was, do you remember the Kavanaugh hearing?
Oh, yes.
And remember all the women pounding on the Supreme Court door?
Oh, yes. Insane. They all looked like wild
banshees.
Yes.
That was Kate's personality right there. My husband and I looked at that and we said, oh, my God, she's metastasized now. Every young woman in America is now behaving like this. And if you look around, if you watch The View, if you watch how some of these women behave on The View, this is all
Unhinged.
And the thing is that Kate was raised in Catholic convent schools. She was raised to be a lady, and she was raised to be quite refined. But she lost all of that, and she became like some sort of wild, savage creature. And it was something we all had to cover for all the time. I was constantly having to go out to the press or to be with people and to cover for this erratic, completely crazy behavior. Now, she's written books about it. She wrote one book called The Loony Bin Trip. And then she took that as her platform and began something called the Mental Patients Project. You know how everybody's in the streets now in San
yes.
Francisco,
yep.
and there are all these really mentally ill people all over the streets of New York? This was Kate. People don't remember this, but she started something called the Mental Patients Project because of our persecution of her. Our entire family was trying to get her committed to a mental institution so she could get some help. Because the main thing to understand about people who are this sick is that they are in agony. I mean, this was what touched my heart and made me so anguished, was that she was suffering so deeply with this illness, and she knew that she was out of control, but her fear was so great. And she got together with a bunch of other mental patients in New York City, and they created something called the Mental Patients Project in the 70s, and they lobbied to get everybody let out of the mental institutions, because to commit somebody against their will is against their civil rights, you know. They're,
yes.
they're American citizens, and they have the right to freedom, and you cannot imprison them unlawfully. Now,
wow.
this is all true. These are all factual things. This is how the left swings. This is how the left rolls. They
yep.
use basic laws. They use our freedoms, and they use them against us. So mm-hmm. what they did was they convinced the authorities in New York State to release every single mental patient from every mental institution in New York. There came a day, Sandy, when all of a sudden, everybody who was in a hospital being cared for with their schizophrenia and their fear and their terror and their hallucinations and all of that, that a particular day when they were turned out into the streets. It was the most dramatic thing if you were living in New York. Suddenly, the streets were filled with mentally ill people, and there was nowhere for them to go. They were lying around in the streets. Gangs of kids were coming and putting cigarette butts out on them, beating them up, kicking them around. There was nothing that could be done. And this was all done in the name of people's civil rights. And now we're facing this plague all over the country, and everybody is saying, what's happening? Somebody's got to do something. We must take care of our mentally ill people. How did this happen? They're all saying. And yeah. and it was Kate. It was
oh, man.
Kate. She led this fight.
Mallory.
And it was Kate. Everybody forgets that Kate was behind this.
Well, see, we wouldn't. This is why you and I are talking. And of course, that's just one thing. I think the thing that you see with her bio and what I heard you explain is her brilliance was unbelievable. She was brilliant. So you've got a combination of brilliance and then whatever, pathology, mental illness, whatever you want to call it. But Mallory, because we're talking to lots of people who don't have the same perspective that we have, who didn't live through that. We have girls, you know, that are many girls would call themselves feminists. Now it's very popular to be that. But they don't really know these stories. They don't really know the roots of this. And so for a second, you've just painted a very fascinating picture of her impact on that issue. And I think most people can see that on the headlines. Look at the homelessness in Seattle and in LA and San Francisco and New York and all of that. And it's very interesting to me that you say Kate was the brains behind that. But when we return, I hear the music playing. When we return, let's paint a picture for us before we talk more about her personal behavior and life. Paint a picture for us after this break about what impact you think she actually had. I alluded to it, but you would know better than I. The impact she had on women in this culture and women around the world. This is Sandy Rios. My guest is Mallory Millett. Her sister Kate is kind of the topic of our discussion, but Mallory is really a jewel because her life has changed and she speaks from so much wisdom, experience, and authority. So I hope you'll stay tuned, especially those of you who are fond of or have a tender spot in your heart for feminism. Stay tuned. We're going to talk about that. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
We're all the time having to fight the exterior world and all that, which is a very real set of conditions in which all power is in male hands and so on and so forth. But so much of the problem is in us too, and really in us, in our own, in all the damage that's been done to us, you know, up to this point, up to this very day. Younger women probably will have less of that to hassle. Older women have more of it. But it's how many days and moments you've been immersed in a really unfriendly, unfamiliar, destructive set of psychic forces, of attitudes about yourself. And if it were just a matter of changing discrimination or something, we could write up a whole series of laws and paste them all over and that'd be it. But with women, just as with any oppressed group, the thing gets interiorized and it, you know, it rots our souls too, so that we really have a cause to say, look, we really not only have been, you know, discriminated against and treated unfairly and so on, but, you know, like seriously aggrieved and destroyed in a sense. And we have to fight back for all the inches of our souls that have been eroded by this, you know. And that's very hard.
That was Kate Millett. That's her actual voice. She was speaking in the late 70s for a film, American feminist film. It was released in 1980. And you heard her talk about women are an oppressed group. It rots our souls. We are destroyed. She really felt that way. And she was committed to feminism. She was also a lesbian, even though she was married. And Mallory Millett is our guest. Mallory, by the way, I want to repeat again, Mallory has a really already herself contributed so greatly to sort of trying to sort things out. I know that even, Mallory, I can hear it in your voice that you love your sister. No question about it, even though she might have been a very, very difficult, changed your life, I'm sure, set it on a course you wouldn't have probably gone on. How do you feel when you hear her speak?
Well, first of all, Sandy, because of the electronics and being on telephone and all of that, I didn't hear very well what was said. But your depiction of it right after the cut on Kate stopped, apparently she was speaking of the gross suffering of women and how women were oppressed and almost held prisoners in their homes by their husbands and all of this. This is everything that you hear Kate say is a projection of her own sorrow and agony, of her own battle with herself. Her inner struggle to try to get out of the prison of her madness. And this is one of the problems with the left, is that they project everything. They're mainly people who have their own personal agonies, their own personal struggles that came from dysfunctional families or whatever. And so they project everything that they're doing onto people on the outside. They will be holding a gun to your head and saying, stop, you're holding a gun to my head. But it's they holding a gun to your head. This is a syndrome of the left that Kate really helped spread, because she brought, the feminist movement was Betty and Gloria and a bunch of women who were kind of dissatisfied with being housewives and tried to create this thesis that women were second-class citizens. I heard somebody say the other day, what rights do men have that women don't have? What is the need for this ERA? And, of course, the answer is none. There are no rights that men have that women don't have. There just aren't. The Constitution doesn't refer to men or women. The Constitution just refers to citizens. All persons, all of us are created equal, meaning we start out equal under the law. If we stand before a judge, justice is blindfold. If you stand before a judge and you're 12 years old, or 50 years old, or 20, or you're black, white, Mexican, male or female, justice is the same for everyone. That's all that means about all people are created equal. That's all that means. It doesn't mean that we are all to have equal outcomes. But you see, the people like Kate who get into this fever about their rights and their you know, the Constitution and they're being oppressed and they're second-class citizens, they're just simply wrong. They're describing their own inner, you know, the people in the Middle East call it jihad. They talk about your inner jihad, and then they go out and they do outer jihad where they try to murder everybody else. But this is the problem. Kate brought Betty and Gloria and all of them were a bunch of women, bunch of girls sitting around dissatisfied with it's harder for them to get a job and all this sort of thing. But when Kate entered the picture, she brought actual violent militancy into the women's movement. She brought hatred for men. She brought the let's kill all the men thing. And it's all really at her hands, that aspect of the movement. It never would have gone that way if not for Kate. I really don't think so. Although I've still never believed in the women's movement. I think it's complete and utter nonsense.
Well, I'm with you on that. I absolutely am with you on that. But I want to talk about some of the things that I heard you share. You said, and we heard in her language in that clip that you couldn't quite hear, she talked about women being an oppressed group, which is the language of Marxism. And you said that she wasn't an avowed Marxist.
Absolutely. Kate's, you see, what people need to know is that after these women who formed NOW, the National Organization for Women, they were a really slick group of women, very well educated, upper middle class to upper class. One of them was the niece of the Secretary of War under FDR. Everything was compensatory. I'm sure that when she was growing up, kids were taunting her, your uncle was the Secretary of War, you're a warmonger, blah, blah, blah. So she had, when she went to school, she had to prove that she was a pacifist. She had to prove, oh, no, I'm not one of those people. Every one of these people is into some sort of compensatory reaction to something about their growing up, you know? But these women met, and they decided to go out and infiltrate every institution. I was at all these meetings where they plotted and planned to, as Marxists, every one of them was an avowed Marxist, a follower of the Frankfurt School, Wilhelm Reich, Karl Marx, Engels, all of these disruptors in Europe who came over to America to bring their filthy message here. They decided that what they would do, these 12 to 14 women, would infiltrate every institution in America, all of the universities, all of the judiciary, the legislatures, all of the schools. They were going to infiltrate every aspect of American life and bring the Marxist message there. Well, Kate's job was to go around the entire country and institute and found these women's studies classes. These are the evil seed, the absolutely bad seed that Kate went around. She planted her little garden. She went to every college and every university, and she started a women's studies class. So if your daughter goes to women's studies, she will be taught, be an outlaw. Don't follow any of the rules. There are no rules. Break every taboo. All the rules have been made by dead white men, and they were vicious and corrupt, and there was nothing they had to give to us that was good. Be an outlaw. And so we've bred this two generations of women who have absolutely no morals whatsoever, who've broken every rule, and who are spreading this like a poison, like a bad seed all over the country. It's a disaster. It's really a disaster.
It is.
And Kate was the author of all of this.
Mallory, I remember hearing about Bernadine Dornan, Bill Ayers, and they used to talk about smash monogamy, which I didn't understand at the time. They would never allow in their group sex between just a man and a woman. It always had to be group sex. And you talked about something like that yourself. You just alluded to it. They wanted to destroy monogamy by promoting prostitutes, promiscuity, homosexuality. I mean, is that from the heart of communist
eroticism,
teaching.
Prostitution, promiscuity, homosexuality, and abortion. Those are the five things they all agreed when they founded NOW, that those were the five things they were going to promote. Okay, now, and also to break every taboo. You know, this is how you destroy a city, destroy a nation. Break every taboo. Think of our taboos. Bestiality, sadism, masochism, every possible taboo that you can think of, they were out to smash and to break. Now, this is just the opposite of what women are put on this planet to be. Women are supposed to be the people who guide society, who make the fundamental rules. Under our Judeo-Christian structure, we use the Ten Commandments. And when we had sanity in America in the 50s, granted, we had some serious racist problems. We had to figure out the thing between blacks and whites. But other than that, if you just look at the regular middle-class home in America, the man went to work, he toiled all day to keep people fed and clad and housed, and the mother stayed home, and she stayed close by her children. She watched everything her children did, and she used the Ten Commandments in order to raise them and bring them up straight and strong and able to deal with the difficulties of life. And so I remember they'd have the coffee clatches at about 10 or 11 at most mornings in the middle-class neighborhoods. The women would all meet at one woman's house. And in those meetings, they would have coffee and coffee cake and talk and laugh and gossip and all those things. But they laid the ground rules. If I disciplined your child, if you lived next door to me and I disciplined your child, you were happy for that. We never said, how dare you speak to my child the way everybody is nowadays. No, everybody agreed that the adults ran the show. The children had to hone to what the adults laid out. And the women in that manner put out good, solid citizens, people who knew the rules, who knew how to behave properly, who knew how to have concern for others. You learned to be polite. You left room for other people next to you. You followed the basic system of the Ten Commandments. And this spread out into the schools, the boardrooms, the bureaus, the departments, the factories. Everywhere in the country, these children were schooled at their mother's knee at these things. And they were not properly equipped to mingle with each other and to be socially upright and to be very helpful to one another. Now, we've got just, if you look at our children, they're filthy, they're covered with tattoos, they're rude, they're blasphemous, their language is appalling, the F word is three times in every sentence, they don't care about anybody but themselves. The society has broken down where we're having, you know, riots in the streets, in the airplanes, we're having mass murders, we're having people who have no concept of manners or decency, and that's supposed to show that they're liberated. That's supposed to show that they're free. Freedom in America was always, you are liberated, and you have liberty to do whatever you want as long as you don't interfere with the liberty of others. Now everybody thinks that they've got a right to interfere with everybody else's liberty because of whatever cause their little Marxist minds have come up with. You know, we saw kids the other day strung across the street, stopping all traffic over global warming. And one man got out of his car and got out and just started throwing their placards all around and disbanding them and saying, get the heck out of this street right now. And we who watched this on Twitter were cheering in our homes, you know. Thank God, a man acting like a man and taking hold of this nonsense going on where people have no right to block other people from moving in the streets. These people were all trying to get to work to feed their families. So what's happened to America is completely, completely at the hands of the women. Women control society. They want to run the world, but men need to run the world. Women need to run society the way they did. We had a beautifully healthy society, and the way in which it functioned was a showpiece for all the world, you know? And it's been completely broken down, it's collapsed, it's been shattered. And now the kids who are born now, somebody who's 10 years old now, has no idea what Western civilization is supposed to be like.
Well, and Mallory, as you and I know that you know this, but I want to say that, of course, that pattern is a biblical pattern, and it is the basis of Western civilization, and that's why Western civilization flourished the way it did, is because we had a biblical pattern that we adhered to. And if you, of course, your sister Kate was not only a Marxist, she was then by extension an atheist, and so she was very anti-God. I want to just say before we come back for this next last time together that Mallory has written a pamphlet called Marxist Feminist Ruin, Feminism's Ruined Lives. Marxist Feminism's Ruined Lives. She has a book on it, and she also has a pamphlet. And you can go to MalloryMillett.com. MalloryMillett.com. We'll put that on our Facebook page. And you can read a lot more about what she's saying here as it lays this out very clearly. But when we come back, Mallory, let's talk about your own personal change. You know, what happened to you? What made you finally sort of look at Kate differently? And we'll discuss that when we come back. Sandy Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I do think the feminist movement is an extremely destructive movement. I think it has poisoned the attitudes of so many young women. Teaching young women to plan their life career without any space for marriage, husband, and children. Now, you know, people can plan their life any way they want, but there are plenty of women, and you're seeing their tearful complaints all the time now, who get to be 35 and 40 years old, and they realize life is passing them by.
That was Phyllis Schlafly. Boy, I heard Phyllis say that in person, and she was so right. Phyllis was really the archenemy of the people like Kate Millett. Phyllis was herself a very, if you want to call it liberated, she was an attorney, a powerful woman who went to Harvard, one of the first women to graduate from that program. She wrote early articles on nuclear disarmament. There was no one quite like Phyllis except maybe Kate Millett, and they were polar opposites. My guest is Mallory Millett, and she grew up with Kate Millett, the feminist who wrote she wrote her famous book, which is escaping my mind for the moment.
Sexual Politics.
Thank you. Sexual Politics, which became kind of the Bible of the feminist movement. I want to just say that, again, I said quickly on the other side of the break that Mallory has a website, MalloryMillett.com, in which you can read all the things that she's written. You can see her appearances. You'll get a lot more information than we have time to get into here. And she does have a pamphlet called Marxist Feminism's Ruined Lives, and that's something that you can get. But the book that we mentioned, which is kind of the same thing but different, just more information. Listen carefully now. It can be gotten at Hosea Initiative. Hosea Initiative. We will put this on our Facebook page so that you can refer to it. But Mallory was just telling them, if you have a daughter that's getting ready to go off to college, or if you've got a daughter in high school, even middle school now, for heaven's sake, this would be a great thing to share with them. And would sort of imprint them for life and get them set on the right course in regard to their feminism. Mallory, I heard you say when you spoke that you were different than your sister. You did not hate men when you were growing up, and she hated men from early on, and that you ended up, though, going to Columbia College against Columbia University against the advice of friends who said, if you go, Mallory, to Columbia University, you will become
It was the University of Minnesota.
Oh, sorry. Okay. University of Minnesota.
The nuns were very shocked that I was going to the U of M because they said I would come out an atheist and a communist, and I laughed at them, and I went, and I came out an atheist and a communist.
And then you go to New York City, and you start, I don't know if that's when you started working with Kate, but you tell the story of your interaction with her as a young woman yourself, who was then, by then, kind of on the same page with her ideologically, and you told some very strange stories. Maybe we should, if you can, I don't know if you can tell this, but as best you can tell it, the story of that dinner that you attended at her apartment, I think it was Halloween of 1 year.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, she invited my friend Lisa Shreve and me to come up for Halloween night. And this was after a bunch of different episodes, which were alarming us more and more and more in terms of our getting mixed up with this feminist movement. Lisa was 10 years younger than I, and she was sort of my little protege. And we went up to Kate's loft on the Bowery. It was a bohemian loft. We went up there. She had a long, low table set with 12 stark naked women sitting on cushions, you know, that low-style sort of Japanese table, very long, 12 place settings and 12 cushions. And we had been told to take off our shoes, but they were hoping that we would disrobe also. We didn't. We were already completely shocked. At every place setting, there was a plate with a bowl of water and a knife put across that bowl of water. And you could hear the sound of knives sharpening in the background. And at the far end of the table, at the head of the table, was one rather overweight woman with a live snake. It was about 10 feet long and about 8 to 10 inches in diameter. Lisa and I were completely dumbstruck. Our hearts were pounding a million miles an hour. We did not know what in the world we had walked into. They were about to do a witch's ritual on Halloween night. You know, when you kick out God, all kinds of weird stuff comes in. People start getting involved in the craziest things. And here was my sister, my so-called genius, brilliant scholar sister, presiding over a witch's coven on Halloween night. And they were deadly serious. Lisa and I took this all in. They said, why don't you join us? We said, oh, no, we'll just observe. We'll just sit here and observe. And when they went back to their ritual, we tiptoed to our shoes without their really noticing us at that moment. We tiptoed to our shoes, and we bolted down the three long flights of stairs out onto the Bowery, just huffing and puffing in total shock and horror. This is the kind of thing that goes on, you know. You know, when I had a therapist during that time, I was working as an actress, and you know, if you're an actor, you have to go to therapy a couple of years. You're supposed to get to know yourself very well. And I was a Marxist at that time, and I was into all these things, EST and all the crazy stuff that was going on in those days. And when I would be on the couch with my therapist, a lovely, wonderful woman named Sandra Enright, she would say to me, you know, everybody who's ever laying on this couch, I've had hundreds of people up here over all the years I've done psychotherapy. Every one of them is the father or the mother or the father and the mother. But with you, it's your sister, Kate. And she finally, one day, I was lying on the sofa sobbing about Kate and how I couldn't get through to her. And she said to me, you know, you're trying to make your sister sane. I said, well, I guess so. I don't know. She said, no, I know. I've seen this so much. You're trying to reason with a perfectly mentally ill person who's entirely irrational, and you're trying to make her sane. And I said, well, maybe, yeah. I keep thinking that the next thing I say will suddenly get through to her, and the light will dawn. And she said, Mallory, you cannot make a crazy person sane. You simply cannot do that. They make sane people crazy, but you cannot make a crazy person sane. I said, well, what do I do? What do I do? She said, you have to leave the room. I said, what? What? I love her. I have to save her. I could, you know. She said, no, no, no. You do not have to save your sister. You need to save yourself. And the main thing for you to understand is to leave the room. I said, well, I can't just leave the room. She would be insulted. She'll come after me with a butcher knife. She's tried to kill me a million times. She said, no, you just say, I have to go to the bathroom. Or, oh, I just remembered an appointment. You just very graciously and quietly and simply leave the room. And it was the most unbelievable revelation. It never occurred to me from the time I was 2 years old. I was now in my mid-30s. I did not have any idea that I could leave the room. So I realized I could leave the room.
Mallory,
and I went out and I voted for Ronald Reagan. And my life has never been the same.
Well, and of course, you know, you are no longer an atheist, and you're certainly no longer a Marxist. But Mallory, let me ask you something. This is always hard to discern, so I don't expect you to have an answer. But did it ever occur to you that your sister might be something beyond mentally ill and maybe into possession of some sort or just...
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, there's no question about that. I remember I was standing in front of two priests a few years ago, and I said something about, well, I had a demonically possessed sister. And they both, their bodies were just rocked with shock. They said, "Oh no, no, you can't say things like that. That's just that's off the wall." I said, "No, I'm sorry, Father. I'm sorry. I've lived with this person when I was born. I was brought into that room to sleep in the same room with her as an infant." I said, "If she isn't possessed, then there's no such thing as possession. If you know that there's such a thing as possession, she's the arch example of it. She is." One time, she held me in a room. I was with her in Berkeley. We'd gone there to do a performance together to show this movie that we'd made together, and she broke down and fell apart, melted down in front of this huge audience in Berkeley Auditorium, where everybody just got up and left eventually because it was so shocking to see this person having a complete psychotic episode in front of them. And I went back to her apartment with her, and I spent 5 days in the apartment where she never allowed me to sleep for the entire 5 days. This is when the real beginning of us, the whole family trying to get her committed, began. Because for 5 days, I wasn't allowed to sleep. She stayed up all night long, talking in a manic state, and I was terrified if I fell asleep, I'd have a knife in my back. I wasn't even sure she knew who I was most of the time. She was frothing at the mouth. She was seeing little green men. Seriously, I didn't know that people actually, when they went insane, saw little green men, but she was actually talking to them. Her eyes were rolling in her head, and I finally called our sister Sally in Nebraska and said, "Look, you've got to come here. I've got to get out of this prison. I've been 5 days alone with Kate in the peak of her madness." So my other sister came and rescued me, you know. But yeah, she was demonically possessed. There's no question about it.
Well, and here's the thing. I mean, I think so too, Mallory, from the story that you're telling. And also, because of the incredible impact she had on the world, there's something supernatural going on here. It wasn't just her book. It wasn't just her book, Sexual Politics. It was also what you talked about, the mental health, the horror that we're seeing on the streets now with the mental. There's no place for families to put their mentally ill kids. And so they're wandering the streets, and it's become a nightmare for the nation. And you can't help but think that there is some power working through Kate that gave her that supernatural almost effect on people and on the world. When she died.
Can you imagine this one person?
No.
Has created all of this chaos.
Yeah, well,
it's
simply
unbelievable. And now people are kind of forgetting her name. This is how Satan works. They're remembering the nice feminists, so you know, all these sort of nice things, and a lot of people now don't even know what you mean when you say Kate Millett. So she's fading into the distance. She is not going to be blamed for any of this.
Yeah, Mallory,
it's astonishing.
We just have a couple of minutes left, and I would love, love, love for you to address the female part of my audience, the moms and their daughters and even the younger daughters. What do you want them to really take away from this discussion about their flirtation with feminism?
I would tell them that every time in this coming election that the word socialism is used, that they run screaming from the room. Socialism is communism. Don't let people play with words like this. Karl Marx said, once we've made them socialists, we've got them as communists. It's the thin end of the wedge of communism. Once they get into this idea of socialism and egalitarianism, in other words, equal results, equal outcomes for everybody, then you've got them. They're definitely little seedling communists, and they will be full-blown communists in no time. Every time you hear the word the collective, if you hear the word collective, get up, leave the room. Don't even stay there. If you hear socialism, get up, leave the room. Stay away. These are forms of profound enslavement. People who go into this and try this experiment, and all people have to do is look at North and South Korea. Look at South Korea, then look at North Korea. There it is. South Korea is capitalism, free enterprise, democracy. North Korea is communism. It's nothing but agony. You look at East and West Berlin. East Berlin was a horror. People were being murdered trying to get over that wall. People would do anything in their lives to get out of East Berlin just to get a few blocks away into West Berlin where there was freedom and liberty and you could live like a human being. And you know, it's fading because I saw some little girl on Twitter the other day saying, "Oh, we have to have the wall. We have to have the wall." We had the Great Wall of China. We had the Berlin Wall. I mean, this girl is completely ill-educated. The Berlin Wall and the Great Wall of China were both used to keep people in, to keep people imprisoned in these terrible countries that they were desperate to get out of. Our wall is to keep our people free of people who are trying to get in that don't have a right to come in. They haven't gone through the proper channel.
Yes, and Mallory,
everybody can come to America as long as they use the proper channel.
And Mallory, you would say
miseducation.
Yes, absolutely. And you would say that Marxism, at the root of feminism, is Marxism, and of course, at the root of that is godlessness. And so
absolutely,
that's your warning. Yeah, so let me just say, Mallory's website again is MalloryMillett.com, MalloryMillett.com. You can get so many good things to help your girls, to help your boys, to help us pull ourselves out of this mess that we have allowed to develop because of our lethargy. And Mallory sold us some shocking things today, but I think that we need to know how very wicked the heart of all of this is. So Mallory, thank you so much, and thanks for just being willing to speak up. And I know it's hard because it is your sister. God bless you, Mallory, and keep you. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Thanks so much, Sandy.
Oh, Mallory, sorry.